When I was a kid, teenager in particular, probably the most powerful spiritual influence in my life, as much as I would love to say, was the tremendous sermons given by our pastor, who was a marvelous man, and he did in fact give tremendous sermons. The fact of the matter was, most of what I understood and learned about God came from our youth group. Came from sitting around with my peers and an open Bible and our youth group leader, who was my aunt, and talking about God. We did lots of really marvelous spiritual things. We said lots of prayers. We had lots of studies. But if I'm being perfectly honest, we also had a tremendous quantity of fun, and we goofed off and did all sorts of things that we probably could have gotten in trouble for if anyone would have noticed that we were doing them. Sort of the highlight of the youth group year was to go on a lock-in. We would rent some cabins at a nearby state forest, way out away from everybody else, and it would just be us, and we would do all sorts of fun cabin out in the woods kind of things. Of course, we would have, you know, our Bible study, but then we also had s'mores, and we had games, and we played, and we hung out, and as teenagers are inclined to do when we get together, we would basically do our best to not sleep, which was always vaguely problematic because we were camping at these cabins about an hour away from church. So we'd do our lock-in, and we'd get up on Sunday morning, 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, so that we could drive back and be back in time for church. After one of these lock-ins, our pastor, fellow by the name of Jimmy Kinsler, he comes over to us after service, and we would all sit together as a youth group, especially when we had a big event. And he comes over to the youth after church that Sunday morning. He says, "I understand that the youth group lock-in was a lot of fun. You guys had a great retreat. You really enjoyed yourselves." We said, "Yes, yes, it's true, we did." He says, "You know how I know that you all had a really great time?" I said, how did you know we had a really great time? He says, "I was exactly 60 seconds into my sermon, and the entire youth group section all went." Every last one of you, just like dominoes, you all went to sleep. He says, "That's okay. I understand you guys stayed up late. That just, you know, proves that you really were having a good time together." He says, "Just as long as you don't snore, we're fine." As far as I know, none of us snored at the time. Stay awake can be a very, very hard piece of advice to follow if you have not slept at all the night before because you've been in the woods at an isolated cabin with your friends trying to convince that one kid that had never been out in the woods before that you could hunt snipe with a paper bag. So you have to be of a certain age to understand how that works. We had a lot of fun. But as much as we were dozing off during the Sunday sermon, and we were asleep, we were very awake. We were very awake in the sense that we were experiencing our faith. We were experiencing the life of the church. We were experiencing fellowship with our fellow Christians. We were experiencing the power of shared prayer. We were experiencing hearing and studying and understanding and learning God's word. And yes, that did mean that we were also experiencing the joys of fellowship until 4 o'clock in the morning. But we were awake. We were awake in our faith in the sense that we were letting our faith be alive, be something that mattered, something transformative, something that shaped and changed our perception of life, reality, the world around us, and more importantly, changed us. Jesus tells his disciples, "You do not know the day when the Son of God will return. You do not know when the second coming will be." He goes so far as to say, the Son himself does not know when the second coming will be. Only the Father alone knows. Side note here, in case you ever find yourself reading or hearing or listening to a minister, a preacher, an evangelist who can tell you definitively when Christ is returning? Christ himself says he doesn't know when he's returning. So unless this minister is better informed than the Son of God himself, he's probably wrong. Just saying that if you have the claim to fame that I know what's in the Father's head better than the Son does, you're probably not telling the truth, at least to yourself. So just a side note there. Christ says, I am coming again. But he doesn't say I'm coming again to his disciples because he wants them to be sure that they're not going to get caught loafing. You know, this isn't one of these jobs where everybody looks at each other and goes, okay, the boss is coming, everybody look busy. You know, and you all suddenly start doing whatever it was that you had to do. I had a job like that once. I was a salesperson. Once we dusted all of the items that we were selling, and we rearranged everything in the display case, if it was 2 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon and there was nobody in the building, well then, your job was just to stand there and wait for somebody to show up. And there were times when you would look through this big, long department store I was working in, and you would see the assistant manager sort of beginning to do their rounds to walk around and see what was happening. And you pulled out that feather duster because you were going to redust those items that you'd already dusted because you didn't want the boss seeing you not doing anything, even though what you were doing didn't actually amount to anything. You just had to look busy. Look busy. Jesus is not telling his disciples, you don't want to get caught not looking busy when Christ returns. He's not saying, just don't get caught by the boss being asleep on the job. No. There's something more to this, in fact. See, when Jesus says that we are to stay awake, it's not about getting caught by the boss standing around doing nothing. It's that there's very important things to be done. And that those very important things that need to be done are not only important to the kingdom of heaven, not only important to the King of heaven, they're important to us. That we need to be a people about being awake in our faith. Because a faith that sleeps does nothing, serves no purpose, accomplishes no good, and is responsible for no form of transformation. Ultimately, faith should be transformative. And if it's not, then it's asleep. Christ says to his disciples, the day will come when I come back. When I come back, all that is wrong will be made right. All that has been abused will be rectified. All that is suffering will be made whole. All that is broken will be fixed. And if we look at the world that we live in, it's not hard to look out there and see a blue billion things that need fixed. I mean, God's honey-do list is kind of impressive. Everything from basic human rights to global problems, war, suffering, famine. There are a lot of things in this world that need fixed. And we look forward to, and like I told the kids, you know, that first candle, we call it the hope candle, the prophecy candle, the expectation candle. It is there to remind us that our hope is in expecting the prophesied one who is Christ to return. Because if we are hoping in humanity, if we are expecting people to fix all of people's problems, well, we've got several thousand years worth of recorded history that might indicate that that's not going to be effective. We have hope that Christ will come and set everything wrong right. But in the meantime, Christ is about setting everything wrong that is wrong in our lives right. About rectifying and changing everything within us that needs change. About making the transformation in us that needs to be transformed. And he does so through faith, through belief, through awake faith that actively participates in a relationship with God. The faith that's asleep does nothing. And sometimes we want to do nothing. I mean, let's be honest. We've all had those nights when we lay down at the end of the day, we put our head on our pillow and we think, wow, this feels good. Man, this is a long day. I have done so much. And we look forward to doing nothing for the next 8 hours but laying still in our beds. There's nothing wrong with rest. But if you've ever had COVID, I hate to say that word out loud, COVID, and you've had to spend that time away from everyone else, that time when you just have to lay in bed and wait for the days to tick by, doing nothing. You watch TV, and maybe you have those loved ones that leave that plate of food by the door and knock and run away. I don't know how carefully you deal with the epidemic, the pandemic. It's miserable. Not having a purpose, not having a function, not having an awake, living experience with reality is miserable. And I know we all think it's going to be great for a little bit. You know, I don't know how many people I've talked to said, COVID, I have to be by myself for 5 days and I don't have to do any work. Sign me up. Those folks only say that for about 48 hours. About 3 days in, you're like, man, I would just love to get out of this bed and go do something, anything. Being awake in our faith is about having purpose. What is a human being without purpose? Miserable, sorrowful, sad, asleep. Christ says, I want your faith to be something awake, something alive, something you practice on a daily basis, something that informs how you live. If our faith isn't informing how we live from moment to moment, it's asleep. I was having a conversation with a Muslim. It's an interesting conversation to have. I recommend doing it every so often. And they were saying, well, you know the difference between your faith and my faith. I said, what's the difference between your faith and my faith? They said, the difference between your faith and my faith is yours is something you do, ours is something you are. I said, what do you mean? They said, well, you go to church on Sundays. I go to church on Sunday. I says, well, but our religion teaches us about how we walk. I said, well, you know, our Christian walk is an important thing too. They said, no, no, no. Our religion teaches us how you physically put one foot in front of the other. There's a Muslim way to walk. There's a Muslim way to eat. There's a Muslim way to sleep. There's a Muslim way to get out of bed. There's a Muslim way to get back into bed. There's a Muslim way to go to the bathroom. He said, that's information I don't need. But apparently there is. And they said, because every element of our life is informed by our faith. They said, that's the difference between a Muslim and a Christian. I said, that's not the difference between a Muslim and a Christian. It may be the difference between a Muslim and a Christian, but it shouldn't be. We should look to our faith not as a thing we do, but as a thing we are. A living, breathing information, a wisdom, a lifestyle that tells us how we walk and how we talk and how we wear our clothes and how we run our homes and how we manage our finances. It needs to be a part of every part of who we are. When Christ says, stay awake, he's saying, let your faith be the thing that makes you alert. Let it be the way that you open your eyes and see the world. It's not about not getting caught being busy when the boss gets back. It's about how we live. So during this Advent season, you have the opportunity to prepare. We're preparing for Christmas, but we're preparing for something much more important. We're preparing as Christians to live out the Christian witness from Christmas forward. So I say to you all, be awake. And in being awake, think, how does my faith inform the way I drive? How does my faith inform the way I tip my waitress? How does my faith inform the way I do my job at my work? How does my faith inform the way I mow the lawn, vacuum the rug? It needs to be something that never is slept upon, but is always the way we open our eyes. And let this Advent season remind us of this.